How many of you have been here last year? How many remember that we promised the book would be out right soon? How many are going to beat us when we leave here? So, the good news first, we finally managed to get the book done, and it's going to be out by end of March, and it's right at the paper right now. As for anyone of you who aspires to write a book, it's different than you think it is. So, today I have the pleasure to talk to you about transport layer security. And are all of you Postgres users? Or? Yeah, looks like it. Great. So, what am I going to talk about? First of all, I have a little talk about what TLS Delph is, just to get an idea of what it is. Maybe when you work later, it's just better to know where to put what you're going to spend. Then, of course, when we talk about transport layer security, we do have to talk about certificates. Certificates as a certification authority certificate that you have to verify as a certificate or as a specific certificate or key that the server or client uses to prove its own identity. And then I'll tell you about, well, the very, very, if I just divide it very basically about the very free features that Postgres can offer server side, translated security into the client side and into the certificate based relay. This is probably a relief for anybody that has ever tried to set up a certificate authentication. I believe certificates based relay is a lot easier. So, why should we talk about transport layer security in Postgres now? Now marks the event, or maybe the week from now. I just read it, was it this today or yesterday, Rob? On the Postgres Metalist, that Vitsa Menema said in a week from now he will be releasing Postgres major version 2.2. That will be the first version that incorporates the then previous transport layer security patch that was Yannick. The code has, well, it has not been rewritten completely, but if you know Vitsa Menema, you will know he will have had a very close look at the code that has been contributed, and he did lots of rewrite. I'm also talking about transport layer security because some things have changed, and some new functionality has been added. I just closed the sum part because we didn't get this time. So what is transport layer security? Transport layer security is a method to encrypt the transport layer between two hosts. That does not mean it will encrypt what the hosts talk to each other. It will encrypt the layer upon which the communication takes place. Very important. I will get to this a little bit. What is it also? Transport layer security is the successor of SSL. SSL, previously introduced by Metzger, if I remember correctly, made the first implementation for hyperthread transfer protocol, soon became used in other applications as well. And just when they were aiming for SSL version 3.1, I think they said, hey, let's make this an open standard thing. They renamed it for transport layer security. So basically, transport layer security version 1 equals SSL version 3.1. What does it give you? It gives you privacy, integrity, authenticity, and access control. And we'll have a look at this later. It gives you a little more than regular access control. It might also give you role-based access control, which is something that the company has added. I don't think he really... He certainly knew what he was doing, but he didn't write role-based access control. I will get to this when we talk about access control. Now to get an idea, you probably all have seen something like this. You tell it to the server, you introduce yourself, the server greets you, then you send an envelope sender, so he says okay, then you send the envelope recipient, then you say okay, then you say okay, let's send some data, and the server says great, and the whole thing, the blue line, down to the blue line. And they say, okay, mine has gone wrong. I want to send a mail to Bernie Rubble. And it's about his mail account. And here we go. And here's the problem. This is something that we don't want to have. Of course, nobody wants to have this. Like the typical situation where you have a user and they say, can you just mail me the password? And you go, no, I'll call you up. That's complicated. Yes, it is. Of course it is. You change the media. You don't want to be traceable when you tell passwords. So that's a regular unencrypted communication. And here's the top. So, let's see. An encrypted communication can only take place if you use the extended SMTP, because TLS as it is not a functionality for regular SMTP, but only for extended SMTP. So, when you go tell them to the server, you will have to hello the server, not hello the server. Otherwise, the server will never tell you if he's able or if it's able, like here in the capabilities, to do start TLS. Start TLS in the capabilities banner is what tells you the server is able to do TLS, or at least it announces it is able. This is a real gotcha. you heard from Ralph laughing. I remember it was a node server that would continuously start and announce start TLS, but it wasn't configured to do so, but it would announce it. So clients would connect, Postgres clients would connect and say, hey, great, start TLS, here we go. And so we go, wow. The host would go away, and we'll say it for a play over and over and over. I'll be showing you later a method where you build a map and you tell it, even if the server announces it, you just ignore it. That's the way. So what happens then? After the server has shown all its capabilities, the client connects back and says, start TLS. What happens then is, server answers, ready to start TLS. The server gets a certificate and signs it with a private key and sends it over to the client. The client gets a look at it, compares the certificate, signature certificate with this certificate authority certificate, which is part of the official service, and if that matches, it means the client was able to verify the validity and authenticity of the service certificate. And only if that has happened, there was a terminal, and the rest of the communication will take place between those two hosts, and nobody will be able to find out what they're doing. So, if you compare the two, and think of the technical security aspects, then with unencrypted SMTP, all you usually have is controlled access. Controlled access in unencrypted SMTP communication is you can control it by IP address. It's a known IP address that may relay. When we speak about accessing an SMTP server, what would you want to control and access? You typically relay. So you identify a mail client by its IP address, or in SMTP authentication, the mail client sets credentials to the server, says, okay, I know you may want the client relay. That is what you have with regular SMTP communication. Now when you go for encrypted SMTP communication for transport and security, you have the privacy because the rest of the communication is shielded. You have integrity because they have the two hosts, they have a session they have agreed on. And when something in that session changes, the data stream changes. A minute, second, the data stream changes, both of them know something's wrong. And they will stop it. And they will break down communication. So you have integrity of data that you should. You have the authenticity because there is somebody in there who said, yes, I know this one over there is who he claims to be, which is the certification authority. You don't have the availability, that's not part of transport security, but that's part of technical security, if you think about that. Alan has been talking here about IoT availability, but that might be something that would take care of availability. And you have controlled access. Because if you notice a certificate, you can say, okay, there's a rule, if I know this guy, or if I know the certificate, then I can do some actions based upon that. For example, relaying. So, what is it that transport layer security does not give you? There are two common misunderstandings of transport layer security. People think when they have transport layer security, everything will be shielded, secure, and there's no problem. But imagine that your client is connecting to a relay host. They use transport layer security. They send it, transport layer, they are secured, and then the relay host contacts a different service, say some MX at ARL.com, and they really they don't do star TLS or something like that. And then the mail that you wanted to have protected just gets transported in regular SMTP. So transport layer security is only between two hosts. There is no guarantee the transport layer security will shield the communication during the whole way until towards the final destination. Also, thinking about it vice versa, you use transport layer security to get a mail message transported to another host. The host, for some reason, has to bounce the message, and the message goes back, but the server, the one that bounces the message, chooses a totally different route to deliver the mail to you, and that might not be encrypted. So, if you need this level of security that nobody should be able to read that, you don't encrypt the transport, but you encrypt the content itself. That is the situation where we use critical privacy, new privacy, SVM certificate, whatever you go and use for that. Exactly the same for the second misunderstanding is transport layer security does not protect, only protect the transport but not the storage. The minute the message has been transported to the receiving mail server, it has to write a new mail queue to do something new with it. The moment it writes a new mail queue, it's readable in plain text. The moment it takes it, for example, says, oh, I'm the final destination, I'm writing the mail in the mailbox. It will take it, put it in the mailbox, and there it says plain text. So it's only for transport, it's not for the storage, and it's not for bouncing. But when will you use it? You would use transport layer security, of course, if you're paranoid, which probably many of us are. It's just like, I don't want anybody else reading this. So you just use it. Then you use it for companies that have co-locations scattered around the country, a town, something like that, yeah? You don't want communication to be seen by anybody. You just have mail servers at each location, and they talk to each other using transport layer security, so anybody is out there. But then, I thought about that. Usually, when you hook up two locations to each other, and they work together, nowadays you probably go for a VPN. So if you have a VPN, you can do without transport layer security. Okay, so what does PostFix offer? PostFix offers server-side transport layer security. That means PostFix offers transport layer securities to clients that connect to PostFix and want to transfer mail towards PostFix towards a final destination. Vice versa, PostFix is also able when it acts as a client, that is the ESMTP daemon. By the way, do you have all of them, this understanding of how pizza names these daemons? The SMTP daemon is the one that receives the mail, the SMTP is the one, the client, that puts it all onwards. Okay. Then you have certificate-based relaying, that is, PostFix relays mail for a remote client because a rule based on the client certificate permits this. And the SMTP client in PostFix uses its certificate to acquire relay permissions from a mail relay. That is, the other server says, hello, who are you? This is PostFix goes here and says, that's me, that's my certificates. Who of you has already taken up to do transport layer security deposits? How did you get a hold on a certification authority that would do services for you?
CA, sir.
There's somebody here, I just know it. That is a great idea because usually, do they charge a lot of money? They don't. That's great because when I started doing transportation security, I went, okay, I need a certification authority that they will sign my certificate request. And I went up and I said, $100, $200. Hey, $200 a year? I mean, I don't run it for my business, I do this private. So that was the deciding point. I said, I do it private. There's no company or business services now. So I came out and said, okay, I'll set up my own private certification authority. But when you're out there and you provide business mail services, you need your certificate, your service certificate signed by an official certificate of authority, or at least the one that many other mail servers know, because if your server tells, I'm Patrick's server, and Patrick signed it himself, others may say, well, that's fine that Patrick thinks of himself to be totally okay, but I want somebody else, and I want a third instance that tells it's okay. So you need a trusted instance. That is typically the problem that most of us have to deal with when we take out and transport security. So, if you do it officially, have the customer pay for it. Just go out, take an official certification authority, have them sign your certificate request, and use them. By the way, when Ralph at the Charity used or configured transport layer security, he was very lucky because he works at it as, or the where he works at, this is part of the network, is part of the German science network, and they have their own certification authority. And they're large enough, so many mail servers tend to know that. But when the certificate authority of Schopen, better? Turning the battery for this laptop. So, when the German science network asked Microsoft, and that's good for them to have their certification authority certificate be added to the regular boot store for Windows, they said, okay, no problem, just give us half a million bucks. And I said, a lot. So there's a lot of money behind that. And if you do mixed use, of course, well, I would do that. I would go for an official certificate. What follows now are a few steps to set up your own private certification authority. There is, if you've installed OpenSSL, usually, I don't know if it's usually on the user share SSL, maybe register for a long time and just ignore many other distributions. It's there on Red Hat. There it says ca.perlscript, or now it's, and I think now it's only called ca. If you call up the new option, nice new ca, it will create a user. You will use the default that are defined under the file, the inner file called user share SSL openssl.cnf. The script itself is a very neglected attempt to create a script that will enable you to run a full certification authority. If you take a look at it, you will see, so you can set up certificates, but you can't make an Aspire, or you can't do all this. It doesn't really take you very far. So you better prepare if you want to set up a real certification authority, you better prepare to do a lot more. But it's okay to generate your private certificate, authority certificate, to have it self-signed and to sign other certificates. Now, if you use it for yourself, you probably using Linux, BSD, or something else, but probably not Windows. If you do it for others, they will have to import the certification authority certificate to Windows. But Windows cannot read the file format that is given or that is created when you initially create the certification authority certificate. I should have chosen a different topic. So, what you get here in the second line is the command line that you use to create a certificate that can be read by Windows. What you do is you run this command. After you run it, when you have a new file, you take this file, you copy it into a Windows machine, you double click on it, the root store will open up and will ask you if you want to import your certificate, and that's it. The moment you do that, Windows will trust any certificate that has been written and signed, verified by this certificate. Now, let's think a little bit about, requirements that we have when we create a certificate that hosted this to use. Skip the CA certificate, let's think about the Postfix certificate. How does Postfix work? Postfix is not a monolithic thing. Postfix is the master daemon invoking or telling other daemons to start up and they terminate after a while, which is defined by the program. When they terminate, they will be invoked shortly after, but when they're invoked, they will have to access the certificate and the private key. Now, if you password protect the key, which is the default when you create a key, you will spend hours sitting there on a terminal typing the password anytime the Postfix needs to access the file. So, the idea is you do not password protect it. When you create a certificate or a key for Postfix, you don't, just like for Apache, you don't password protect it, but you read and write protect it later. What's also important? That's a typical lecture and then the Postfix panel is where people turn up and say, I have this TLS and it doesn't work because they don't want to talk and they stop and I don't know, I spent 3 hours and now 3 years and finally I've taken and somebody, like some maybe somebody will know me. Sometimes Ralph turns up and says, RTFM. A classic induction is that people forget that the common name when you create a certificate, you have to enter a common name. The common name must match the host name of your main server. Because that's part of the identifying process that takes place. The client connects to the mail server and uses a certain host name. The certificate that comes back has a common name in there. And the client compares the host name it used to the common name that's in the certificate. If they don't match, the client just says, oh, I think we have a problem. The one I'm talking to is not the one I wanted to talk to. Okay? So they must match. This is not the case for client certificates. If you just, or if at all, you would use a mail client that also includes Postfix SMTP client, then it's not required that the host name must match the common name. And something that people working on the Postfix mailing list, I think about 3/4 of a year ago, and nobody could come up with a solution until Lucianica came back, who had just become father and was totally distracted with everything else. There's a baby, wakes up all the time, takes you back. Then he looked at the mailing list and said, oh, but that's very simple. If you have a mail server that serves many domains, and let's just assume that all of these domains also offer transparent security. How would it happen? When I go for mailexample.com and it replies with a certificate, the certificate reads as common name mailexample.com, it's perfect. But if I go for mailexample.net and the server answers with mailexample.com, we have a problem. Because the names don't match. The solution to have this work with the same server is you use subject alternatives. This is an extension to OpenSSL, or at least to the certificates that you can create with OpenSSL. This is for each additional hosting, you can add a subject alternative entry, and this subject alternative entry will hold the name. Postfix is able to understand that as client, also as a server. And that way you get around the problem when you're going to be running multi-domain mail. So, to create a key certificate request, you can use the CA script I've just been talking about, but the script will automatically try to ask you for a password. You should get around that. So you just call it like this. And but you get this, in this case, a file called key.m. Then, if you use an official authority, you will have this, you will send this, usually you will send this or use a diskette or something like this and transport it to your certification authority. They will have a look at it, they will check it, and eventually they will sign it. And then you will get back your key and a certificate, and you can take those to a user postfix. If you do it yourself, you have to sign the whole thing. This is OpenSSL, send the CA command or option. We'll tell SSL, do me a favor, act as a certification authority. And then we go for different policies. There is many policies. I haven't had, time is the wrong word, but I haven't had the chance yet to dig through all the policy options. So you are left to that yourself. You can have, just to get an idea, you can have policies for when you sign certificates, when you say, this certificate may only be used as a mail certificate, or this certificate may only be used as a web certificate, or only as mail server, or only as mail client. So you can use, you can define different roles. What you do is you create a file called cert.pem, and what goes in is a key.pem. It's just one change to four. Now, the next thing you should have to do is when you set up, we're still up in setting up postfix, we haven't configured postfix. Next thing you do is you need to find a location to give the certificate and the key to postfix. My best recommendation is the things that belong to postfix, give to the postfix, and the other things like a file or a directory where any other application in the server might want to have access to, because it contains all the certification authority certificates that your machine or any application want to be using, you should put it in a globally available place. So, store postfix key and certificate separately. Store the CA certificate in a different directory. And here we go, we didn't password protect it, protect the key. Limit it to root postfix, because it's a privileged service. It will start as root, and it will change to nobody. But before it does that, no, to use a postfix, but before it does that, it reads in every file, it needs to read in tables, blah blah blah, blah stuff, and of course a certificate. So, change on it to root, postfix, read it, that's your password. Never put your certificate or anything like this into a change root. You don't want that. Somebody could plug you in. So, my solution to get to a bunch of certification authority certificates is just reuse what the Apache web browser brings with, the so-called CA bundle CRT file. It holds a lot of certificates that are all just concatenated into one file. Have you ever tried to go out and collect certification authority files? Did you ever try to collect your certificates? I think I spent a day while writing the book, and Ralph and I said, okay, I'll do the TLS stuff, and I said, okay, let's find a good way to get certificates from certification authorities. And I went to, I don't know, I went to many. And the hardest thing to find was to find their certificate. I don't know, I thought it was the basis of their business to give that away. That enables you to do the rest. This was the hardest part to find out. So my fallback solution is use the profile and kind of patch. If you have if you run your own certification authority, add this to the root store. I will now call this for now, which is called the root store, okay? Because this is a store that contains all our certification authority certificates. Add it in there, because when the server offers a certificate to a client, it must be able to prove the whole chain of authorities that have signed its own certificate. If it's not able to prove that, the client may disconnect. Some go, we say, okay, that's not that problem. I have it, it's not that problem. But by the rule, they should. So the server must be able to send the whole chain. If you're in a certification authority chain, you have to provide all the certificates within that chain. Now, here are the basic TLS configuration parameters. Of course, the most obvious is SMTPD, use TLS. That's the most obvious. That enables transport layer security. From that moment on, if you skip the rest of the lines, then PostIt would not be able to work. Still, PostIt will start and offer start TLS. The next thing, which is pretty practical, is instead of SMTP, TLS log level of 2. The default is 0, you can go up to 5 if you try to go and buy a separate hard disk. It's very, very verbose. But it's perfect for debugging. And then there's something else that doesn't do any harm. We'll see that later in the hands-on session. You can have the SMTP daemon add a header to each mail that has been sent or received using TLS. It just writes down, I use this certificate, the client did this, did that, just a few parameters. It's nice to have it for debugging. And there's no information there that will eventually make you not aggressive, but vulnerable. There's nothing vulnerable in there. So, if you run a version prior to OpenSSL 0.9.0.97, then you will have to add TLS random source. This is a path to either the viewRandom or the random that will tell POSIX or will tell OpenSSL where you can get some entropy from. Versions later. In versions like that, OpenSSL by itself is able to determine if there's one of those devices and then you use them by itself. And then, of course, since it's a server, the server will show later, you have to show its certificate, and it also has to sign the certificate and use some keys. You have to provide paths to the key. That is the SMTP TLS key file, and the SMTP TLS cert file, or whatever. And now, what follows now is an either or option. You either choose the one or the other. To make it more complicated, you can do both, but go for one or the other. The first is, if you have all the certification authority certificates in one file, you use the SMTP TLS CA file. If you have them in a directory, just because you like them. You use the CA path directory. You have to create an index. You have to use the C rehash utility that comes from OpenSSL to create an index. This is very simple. You just have C rehash another path to where all the files are, and then it will create an index. This index is there for OpenSSL to access the certificates faster. It won't work if you don't create an index. Now, suppose you don't run it for a home use, suppose you run it for a company, and unless you have some dedicated hardware that will take care of that, you're going to go something in between, which is have postfix maintain the session cache. That is, when a client reconnects and reuses the session ID from before, postfix can look up in this cache and say, yeah, I got this. Okay, skip the rest, just go on. That's the basic idea. Now, again, think about the architecture of postfix. Postfix isn't one monolithic thing of software. It's master calling SMTPD, which may spawn many processes. That means this SMTPD daemon could handle a session, and that one over there, and this one over there as well, and that one over there as well. And the moment they die, they don't have any idea of all the session numbers that the others have. So what you have is, you have an external cache, which is external from the processes of postfix. I think it wasn't until the two of us asked Pizza about this thing that we said, oh my god, Lutz really did an external cache. Seems to be very hard to do, but anyway, they did it. So it is an external cache that all SMTPD processes can access. The cache will be completely rebuilt when you restart postfix. And there is a need. The keys in there expire after a while. The default is 300 seconds. Postfix uses a default of 3,600 seconds. The maximum time is 24 hours, as recommended. The maximum time. The default is 3,600 seconds. After that default time, all the keys in there that are older have to be expired. It means they have to be removed. How would you do that? You do it with a new daemon. I mean, anybody who's ever used TLS before with POSIX knows there is an extra daemon, TLS manager. And that's a job of TLS manager. It assists in creating random numbers. That means you can hook some special entropy source to that if you don't, or if you open SSL bridge and is not able to provide entropy itself, or if there's no defi random or random in your machine. I think Lutz even wrote a special program to create entropy for that. So you can hook up the program together with TLS manager and entropy for context. TLS manager, of course, also clears expired session keys and rebuilds the database. That takes away a lot of load from postfix. Now, for the ones of us who think they have to take it really, really safe. There are some people who come up with a postfix and say, okay, I found this SMTPD enforced TLS thing, which is really great because now I can force any other client on the internet to use transport layer security. But what happens if there's a client, let's think in terms of a different remote mail server that wants to transport a mail person that is totally unable to use transport layer security. It will lock it out. So he will reduce a lot of email. It breaks SMTP communication. And that is why the request for comment that describes this says a publicly referenced SMTP server must not require using the start tables. That's why you should use, you can use that option, but you should use it only on a private network. For example, if you hook up company communications here. Last year I've been talking about SMTP authentication, and I've been telling that among the mechanisms that a client may choose when it has to authenticate itself with the mail server are the second easiest one to use are plaintext mechanisms. But they do not encrypt the password. They just encode the password. It's a base 64 encoding. You can very easily decode the whole thing. So also gotcha in the post is people said, I have this here and this might lock for this computer authentication. And somebody else says, that's your username, that's your password. You know, why did she do that? Very simple, just to prove that the people have that they should very fast change their password. So the problem is Outlook is very popular. Outlook Express is very popular too. All they can do is, well, usually all they can do is log in. Log in is one of two plaintext mechanisms that we use. So if you want to have your mail users use Outlook, if, well, if they want to use Outlook, and you want to have a secure server, you don't want to have your server hacked or whatever, you should put the shield around the plaintext communication. This is where TLS enters. You can set up rules that will say, most fixed SMTP daemon, you offer TLS, you offer authentication only when TLS is being used. Or, which I, what I think is more elegant, you split the whole thing and you play with the SMTP SSL security option. There's two different parameters for this. There's SMTP SSL security option, which does it for regular SMTP, and then there is a special set of security options which does it when you use transport layer security. So you use the first rule and say, when you do regular SMTP, this is SMTP SSL security options, there is no anonymous mechanism available and there is no plaintext mechanism available. That will just make login plain vanish, but all the others may use RAMDD5 or any other mechanism they would be able to use. And then, as soon as somebody else comes in and says, okay, I'll do TLS, POSIX will restart the SMTP communication after the TLS and will offer plaintext communication. That is, plain login will show, will somebody show up with the communication. That is, I think, the far more elegant version. And probably also the one that will cost you less resources, because the ones that are able to use any other mechanism that is no plaintext mechanism will not require your server to go for a TLS session. This is going to be a little faster. Actually, almost the same configuration applies when you configure the posted SMTP client. Of course, you have to enable it, use TLS, and if, again, you will send the log letter. There isn't a receive header because there isn't a receive header. So you can't configure posted to log the receive header when the client just pushes something away. The other remote server would have to have an option to log. All things to log something you didn't have as the messages header. And then what you need is you need to tell the POSIX client where it could find CA certificates to verify or certificate the remote server issues. Again, it's either a directory or it's a file. Here's the same. Now, something I want to focus now is not the way POSIX handles here, of course, it's a TLS manager, but this will be coming up in the next slide. You see that they have bold-faced B-tree. That is a new database format that POSIX, until the old TLS patch uses a different database type and uses only that database type. That's a database type Lutz Jellinger had gone for because he needed a database and he could have POSIX write and read from and regular database types before POSIX don't allow that. Witzel wasn't very excited about adding a new database type, but he just looked around and he said, well, there's B-tree, and we can use it. This is exactly so. He switched the default database type. If you have an old TLS and you're going for a new release, you will have to change that format, otherwise it will not work. Now, if you want to control, remember the Locus Domino server and the node server I was talking about? This is the part. Now, if you want to control when POSIX should use transport layer security and when not, then you first of all have to learn about servers that offer it. This is the first parameter you need to find here. It's the SMTP TLS node star TLS offer. If you enable that, you will find nodes in the mailbox saying this server offered to transport security. It won't have to use it. Postgres probably, maybe you did not configure Postgres to use transport layer security, but it will know it. That's a good way for you to learn. You use it also with a small combination of the So Ralph had it running there and said, okay, Postgres wasn't able to verify the identity. Why? Okay, they had a certification for the certificate that wasn't in the root store, so it took it out and it got it. So that was a way to build his own root store. The next thing is, if you want to control it, you build a map. The map is, to the left side, the key is the host name, and to the right side, the value is either none, may, must, or no, must no peer match. None, obviously. So, in case you run into domino.example.com and it offers it, but it fails, you just do domino.example.com, and to the right side, either none, Postgres will be happy to ignore it. The next is may. Actually, I don't really understand why the may option is there, because Postgres may, if it wants to, how would Postgres want something or not? So it's either, it's a switch, you say yes or no. The third option is must. This is, Postgres should use transport layer security. And if it, for some reason, fails, the whole mail transfer will fail, because Postgres may put it back into the queue and reschedule it and say, okay, we'll do this in half an hour later. Then it will go for the same thing and will fail again. This is a situation where you absolutely want to force the transport layer security used when you send a mail. You can use a lesser version of this if you use the must no peer match option. That is when your client, posting the sent to the client, detects that the post name is used does not match a common name that is written to the certificate. Remember, the first thing they said they have to match. This is an option to get around that. They say, okay, use it and be happy to ignore that the names don't match. Okay, thank you. So, now that you have these settings here, what does it mean for the rest, for other servers you did not define in that? It means this map will always override main CF settings. If you enable transport layer security main CF and disable it here, this map will rule. If you disable transport layer security main CF and you enable it for a specific host in here, the rule will work again. The rule will always override. The same goes for the Postgres SMTP client, just as I said, you can protect the plaintext mechanism by wrapping transport layer security around here. You can do it vice versa here. So also, you can order the SMTP client not to use any plaintext or anonymous mechanism if it doesn't use transport layer security. The second option here says SMTP SSL TLS security option no anonymous, assumed, and transport layer security has been established between the Postgres and SMTP client and remote mail server, it might use plaintext. So, and here's the third part of it, certificate as relay. We go for the usual stuff. Here we come to the star TLS. This is the tunnel. And now, I haven't put this in here, now take a look. Now the server asks the client for a client certificate. And the client sends it over to the server. The server looks for the certificate in the map, and if it says, for example, okay, it will permit relay. That's in a very basic how certificate-based relaying works. Until now, in the old patch by Lucianica, you only had two parameters you could use. You have permit TLS client certs and permit TLS all client certs. Permit TLS client cert would have you create a table, and if Postfix was able to verify the MD5 fingerprint with lines sent along with a certificate with a string in the table, it would allow the client to relate. Vice versa, the second option I don't like at all. Permit you as all clients here. This will have Postfix happily relay mail for any certificate that has been signed by a specific certification authority. Now, just think of what that would mean if you, for example, put that to the directory or point that to the directory that holds all your certification authority certificates. Any client that has a certificate signed by, by any of your 500 certification authorities will be happily allowed to relay. I think one should really use that very cautiously. Those two options here, they do pretty standard access control. It's just they look up and they said yes, so that's it. Victor Dukovnik came 3 weeks ago, came up with a new map type or a new option that is called Check CZ Access. Check Client Server Access is a typical Postfix restriction option that points to a map. What happens with this map, you have all the options that you have from a regular access type map. You can say, okay, reject, permit if this is, you can say, filter to, if this happens, filter it and send it to a different transport. For example, you can say, if this guy sends an email, give me a bit and send it for an extra virus scanner, or something like that, yeah? If Rob sent a mail, send it to this field. you could also say, this guy is part of, I don't know, management. Yeah? They may relay from everywhere, and they may use any dumb single front name, whatever they can think of. Because if they misconfigured their mail, they would just Google and send it. You could have a very restrictive set with restriction classes. You could have, in this map, you could point to a restriction class and say, okay, the sender name must match this and this format. What you have to do is, because this is not the standard, you have to have the configured Postfix to ask the client for a certificate. If you don't do that, it will probably fail, because clients are not supposed, are not, by default, they don't have to send their client certificate. So, the first thing is, you configure Postfix to ask for a certificate. Then you create a map. The map, this is the old map style. The old map contains the MD5 fingerprint, and usually, actually, that would do it. But since a map mostly consists of a key and a value, you have to add two things. So what you do is, on the left hand, you add an MD5 fingerprint, and on the right hand, you add anything that seems valuable to you. You create this map. Then you add a pointer to the relay client serves map, which is hash, in this case hash etc postfix relay client serves, and then you add the rule into the SMTP receiving restriction. The new way would be to have Postfix ask for the client certificate, create a map that would have, again, the MD5 fingerprint as the key, and on the right as the value, you would put to one of the access map type options, okay, some restriction, refer, ether, hole, whatever you can think of. And then you point to that map directly from the description. What you have to do for the client is, remember, just before we said all the client needs is access to the certification authority restore. When you want it to have to be able, when you want it to be able to send its client certificate, and key, of course, you have to point it to a location where those are. Those, of course, also have to be specially recommended. So, for anyone who still is willing to buy a book, there is a